CliffCentral.com.
This show contains adult content. If you find it offensive, please go to the CliffCentral.com website where there's a show for you.
Sex Talk on CliffCentral.com. It is Friday morning. This is Unradio. This is unscripted. And this is, without a doubt, uncensored because of the pervert sitting opposite us in the studio this morning. It's been a long time since you've been here, you perv.
Yes, it has. I'm so sorry. I've missed you guys.
We've missed you.
Glad to be back.
But you've been doing some interesting things.
Yes.
So let's put a name to the voice. Bruce J. Little is with us.
Hello, listeners.
After all your adventures, which have been really, really cool and interesting, we're going to hear about them. And some new understandings from the world of trance.
Yes.
Some interesting stuff going on. Mm. Really cool. Okay. So let us do this first, our dirty dictionary word. So what is so cool is a listener sent me a whole lot of dirty dictionary words.
Oh, so awesome.
Somebody listens to the show and really enjoys it and sent us some. Alex, thank you so much. A comoclitic.
A comoclitic.
And it somehow doesn't.
So it's interesting. Would comoclitic be the opposite? I need to look that up.
So comoclitic is somebody who can accommodate a clitoris.
Okay, you're kind of in the general area, but otherwise you are far
away. It's always difficult
away.
To be in the right area when it comes to the clitoris. It is quite a general area for a homosexual.
I understand. Yes.
If you're in the right area, you'll be guided. Maybe they'll, because you're in the right area, so you. A hand will come through a mouth.
But you're focusing on the wrong part of the word, you see. That's the problem. Tamar, any clues?
The only thing that I could hear is clit.
Yeah, you see, you are just fixated
that
on
is so true.
These tiny little pearls, which are not so tiny.
Not
actually,
so tiny.
In truth, because like icebergs. Clits are like icebergs. Mm.
Did you see that part of video that I sent you from that porn when we were looking for images and slaves, you haven't, you're too busy. So I promise you, after about an hour or an hour and something, that they've been stimulating her clit to get all kind of BDSM stuff to do. Her clit was in the size of a chin. Mm. It was humongous. It was like a little cock. I couldn't believe it.
So as I said, the clits are like icebergs with a very small portion above the surface and everything else is underneath. So you've got to know where to look for all these wonderful things.
But I'll bear that in mind.
Okay, so if it ever happens, phone me.
For research purposes.
If it ever happens, phone me.
Cool, I'll do
and
that.
And I'll guide
keep you, on
you
the
through
line.
That.
No, so you will guide these lovely lady friends. You just tell them, keep searching for the growth of the clitoris. It means that you are in a high state of pleasure.
Mm.
It means that you have more blood is flowing there. Research.
Yes.
Research.
So we will do that. And I'm so looking forward to sharing with some of our listeners in Cape Town tonight, which is really exciting. Tonight and tomorrow, I'm really excited about the workshops there. Doing something I've never done before, which is really, really cool.
Okay, jumping up. What are you going to do with never done before?
Well, there are two new workshops.
Oh, wow.
And on Saturday afternoon, we are doing the Sensual Meditation of Touch, which I did in Joburg last weekend for the first time. And it was beautiful. It took people to such a deep space of meditation and of connection using the simple tool of touch. Really, really beautiful.
Wonderful.
So powerful.
Mm.
And some other really cool stuff coming up. Anyway, I'm really looking forward to tonight and tomorrow in Cape Town.
Where is it going to be?
I've gone totally blank on the venue. I'll come back to it.
We'll put
it
on Twitter just now. Okay.
A Tree of Enlightenment in Gardens.
All right.
Through
just
the
Google
Mountain
it.
Gardens.
Perfect.
Google it. We'll be there. Definitely. Okay. You went to the Pink Lurie's to do some fascinating things.
Yeah.
Did you take your clothes off there?
No. Well, no. I did.
You're getting like more disappointing by the minute here.
No. I'm becoming a real Pollyanna. I don't know what that's about. Yeah.
So what did you do at Pink Lurie's? It was exciting.
Yes. So I was helping the organizers of the Pink Lurie just from a creative perspective. Uh-huh. So it's sort of like a free consultancy is what I would say. They needed some help.
Okay.
And
did they at least pay for you to be there?
They paid for me to be there. Yes, it was like a holiday. It was fantastic. Okay. And they also facilitated a situation where I could publish my book.
Yes. Tell us about your book.
So in between 2010 and I think about 5-6 years ago, I was doing various little comedy cabaret shows throughout South Africa. And I had quite a few requests from students and other actors, you know, asking me to please provide them with some of the monologues from the shows that I did. And I remembered in my first year at university struggling to find queer-themed monologues. There were lots from the 90s, mostly concerning guys doing these very sad monologues about their partners dying of AIDS.
Mm.
And that they're very very powerful and very important. But I wanted something that had a South African context, and I wanted something a little bit happier. You know, everything I read at that time with all the films I was watching and all the stuff was just – homosexuality was just one and the same as dying of AIDS, and I wanted to do something about that, and so that's how these came about, and they're called Little Poof Homonologues.
Cool. And now, the spectrum of topics that they cover?
All sorts. So some of the characters are they're characters that are based on the different members of the LGBTQ community that I know. So there's Mariska, the reluctant fag hag. She's in love with her best friend, Corneille, who's gay. There's Papillon, the Congolese car guard, who falls in love with a young man whose car he looks after once or twice a week. There's Shanaz, the Cape Malay hairdresser, and she's sort of non-binary. Sometimes Shanaz identifies as male, other times she identifies as female. And so there's all sorts of different characters. That
sounds lots of fun,
yeah,
Brucey.
So there's a lot of lightness in it as well.
Yes. So all of the each of the monologues has got a little bit of gravity. Otherwise, you know, things are – what's really funny is when things are really serious, then you can turn them in such a way to make them funny.
Mm.
So like, for example, Shanaz gets attacked at an ATM by a wannabe thief and ends up beating him off with her handbag. And so it's something that we struggle with in South Africa every day, but it was just putting a spin on it.
Mm.
So, yeah.
Very cool.
You know, something just struck me. I mean, doing some reading and some research, because it's a show that I'm starting to get ready for and looking at different perspectives on feminist porn.
Mm.
So there's some very interesting perspectives on it. Is there kind of any equivalent in the gay male world?
Of
what
feminist?
Would,
not necessarily
what
feminist,
would the,
but maybe politically correct.
What would the tie-in be for that?
You know, I think the closest thing to it at the moment is porn companies and associations that are still using condoms.
Mm.
Because most have migrated towards bareback.
Mm.
Because of the demand.
Mm.
You know, most gay guys that I know as well, you know, when you're watching porn, it's fantasy. So you don't want to see a condom for a lot of people. Mm. Whereas people who, you know, porn companies and organizations and film companies that are still using condoms between their performers is quite it's seen as being quite conservative and very responsible because it's promoting a safer sex practice.
Mm. Yeah. And one of the interesting things about ethical porn is the movement towards people paying for porn as opposed to free porn, you know, with all the tube sites and things.
Yes.
Like Pornhub, for example, which is one of the biggest in the world, if not the biggest. Is there anything in the gay community about that, or are people, wherever we can get it, we're happy?
It's one of those things that people who pay for porn and generally will subscribe to a specific website because they have a taste for a certain.
So they're looking for something specific.
Yeah. So there's different websites to cater for different flavors and tastes, and it's sort of associated with prestige or your financial situation. So the average pleb, like myself, will find porn that's free on one of these, you know, accumulative websites that has a little bit of everything, but it lasts for a minute or two. Mm. And then people with money will buy a subscription to a certain website, and it's more convenient, it's much easier, you don't have all these ridiculous ads popping up the whole time. But and there is prestige associated with it, you know, if people know that you are subscribing, you have more status.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to put it on my Facebook status. You know.
Yeah.
I subscribe to my porn. I pay for my porn. Do you?
I support them.
Not a bad idea in some ways. You know, somebody who's made DVDs, my educational DVDs are out there. I really understand and relate to it.
John.
Let me know they're out there.
No,
already.
But can you just, is it on the website?
Oh.
Just
on the Eros Life website.
But that's something you need to remind every show because such sensual, beautiful content between two, taught on two men. It's something that is very.
No, that's not out yet.
Oh, that's not out. Okay. So I was waiting for that. Okay.
You must post these things on Vimeo so people can download them and they'll pay you. They have to in order to be able to download it. So.
Yeah. It's true. It's really interesting idea. Where can people get your book?
So you can get it on I've got a website called Little Poof, the Homo Fabulous Show on Facebook. Mm-hmm. And there is a system there for you to be able to place an order and transfer the money and then it'll be delivered to you. Or you can just speak to me directly in Messenger on Facebook. Mm-hmm. And if you're in Joburg, I can drop it off for you. So
it's wonderful. So I'm holding a copy of the book in my hand, and I really thank you for this. It's really fantastic entertainment, and it's just could not quite share one of the monologues from the book with you.
In fairness, I didn't know we were going to discuss the book at all today, so I thought we were going to talk about other things.
Okay. We are.
I would have.
Okay, so you know what I have learned over the years from some very interesting people, and I have to own this. I have taken many people to task about being self-promoters.
Yes.
Okay. I struggle with that. It's not something I'm good at. I see the value of it.
Yes.
I've never been good at it. I've never been comfortable with it. And I applaud people who do it in some way because it gets them out there. It gets their stuff happening. It makes them money. It does whatever it does in the world.
Me too. Yeah.
We need to learn this shit, Bruce.
I agree
100%. We need to learn to do it. You need to walk around with a box of them in your boot.
Oh, well, I do have some in my boot, so you'll have a copy later. Okay. Don't you worry.
Okay. So that wasn't because I want to. Love to promote it and get it out there for you, which is great.
Thank you.
Because I think you do some wonderful stuff. Did you do any shows in Knysna?
No. Unfortunately, the funding that we were hoping for fell through at the last minute. So, and, you know, it's fine for me. I have a full-time job. Mm. So I was quite happy to do a show. But I needed a director, and I do the shows that are accompanied by a pianist. Mm. And so they need to be paid. These, you know.
Absolutely.
And we were just not in a position to be able to pay them. So I had to cancel that, which was very sad.
Okay. Part of the showbiz.
Mm. Yeah.
Okay, so when we spoke last week, we spoke about, you mentioned some new issues that are coming up in the trans world, or new take on these issues.
Well, there's so much going on at Inova in general. So I work at Inova Health Institute. So there's so many different things that I can talk about. So we have a new Facebook and website that's popped up called Young Heroes. Mm-hmm. So Youth Day is approaching on mid-June. So it's all about promoting sexual health and awareness among young people between the ages of 13, well, young men between the ages of 13 and 23. And it's quite a sensitive issue because we can't be seen to be promoting sexual behavior or homosexuality or that kind of thing. But what we're doing is we're providing resources so that people who are who they are between the ages of 13 and 23 can be exposed to those resources.
Which is an incredibly fucked up situation.
Yes.
Just by definition.
Completely.
That there are people who are having these experiences and yet we cannot really get to them openly.
Yeah.
And it has to be in this roundabout channel.
It's very frustrating.
And these are the experiences that they're going to carry with them.
Mm.
And they're going to really form how they see sexuality.
So what kind of stuff are you putting out for them?
So there's all sorts of things. On Youth Day, there'll be a flyer, quite a big A3 folder that'll be in many, many South African newspapers, just promoting the website, getting young men to migrate to the website and to expose themselves to more information about HIV, safer sex, gender. We touch on things like trans identity and gender nonconformity. Because people have this strange notion that if you expose young people to these things,
they will become,
you know, as if you can catch homosexuality or being a transgender person like the flu. And the truth is that there are already young MSM men who have sex with men who are as young as 11. They don't know what they're doing, but they're already engaging with one another in these sexual ways. And the best thing to do is to empower young people with knowledge.
But the simple truth is, and this has been proven time and time again, is that the more information people have, the more responsible the choices they're going to make.
Exactly.
Sure. And that is regardless of their orientation, regardless of what they're going to do. People with more information tend to have sex a little bit later.
Yes.
Or if they're having sex at younger ages, they're much more aware of safety on so many levels.
So true. So we just need to spread the word and get more people to talk to their kids and to be more open-minded. You know, the problem is when something becomes taboo and people become scared of talking about certain things, then those things become even more exciting and even more
Absolutely.
Naughty. And when a young person thinks that something is naughty and exciting, then you're going to be so much more susceptible to peer pressure because you can't ask your mother and father or your aunt and uncle or the questions that you want to know. So you're going to learn everything you know about sexuality from your peers, other 13-year-old boys. And that's not the best place to pick up your information.
I can vouch. Absolutely. Between that and the internet,
there's
some scary stuff out there.
Definitely.
So here's an interesting, it's a digression.
Mm.
I read an article 2 weeks ago. It was about the fact that during sex, men are quiet.
Really?
The article was entitled, "Where Are You, Oh Man?" The story was that years ago, I was walking down the corridor of a sex club, and there's all these closed doors with all these people having sex behind these doors. And you just hear women. And then I've taught a lot of sexual workshops, a lot of sexual massage workshops. And on, for example, some of the genital massage workshops, women make noise when they are experiencing pleasure.
Yeah.
And men do not. And I know, and I hate this, because it was actually a question this week. Every week, for those of you who don't know and who have not visited our page on the Cliff Central website, we do a Q&A from listeners where they ask questions and I answer them. And it's very brief. It's just a couple of lines. So the question this week came, do every man like fingers up their butts? And the answer was no, because everybody likes something different and everybody likes something different every day. And just because you like it today does not mean you want it tomorrow. It's like, you know, you have pasta for supper tonight and tomorrow night you have sushi.
Yeah.
And the next night you have steak and then you have chicken and then you have salad and you have all sorts of different things.
But for the record, I'm all for it.
And every day is different, but in principle. So
try it.
Yeah.
See if you like it.
Blanket question.
Yes.
Are gay men more vocal during sex than straight men?
You know, I would have to...
Talking about generalization.
I'd have to generalize.
Yeah, but I said it's a generalization.
Yeah, but I come with quite a bit of...
experience.
Empirical observation.
Of course, research again.
Yes. So in my experience, I would guess that yes, in general, quite a few gay men are quite, that I've experienced are quite vocal. Interestingly for myself as well, I've noticed if I'm having sex with somebody that in the past, when I've been having sex with somebody I don't know very well.
Distant past.
Oh yeah, the long
pre-cobwebbed.
Distance. Yeah, shame. Shame for me, hashtag shame. If I don't know the person well, then I'm generally also quite silent.
Mm.
But, I have been known to be quite vocal, when I know the person really well. It also depends on, I mean, whether you're topping or bottoming. You know, if you are bottoming and you are receiving and you're receiving a big particularly big
sensation,
you're going to be more likely to. You're going to be vocal about it. So it all depends.
I've only visited one gay sex club.
Yes.
And that was quite a long time ago. And my memory was not that clear of the vocalization.
It's very difficult to tell because in most of these sex clubs, they've got porn videos showing the whole time. And the porn videos are incredibly vocal.
Absolutely.
So gay porn is like, you know, it's just ridiculous. It's like overperformed masculinity
because
that's so untrue.
Heterosexual porn with women.
That's part of,
the same.
There was something interesting that I did read about porn. It was just an interesting little take on it.
Mm-hmm.
That porn is made, it was about whether porn actors and actresses experience pleasure during filming.
Yeah.
And it was a fascinating comment. It's not made for them. It's made for consumers.
Yeah.
So it's not about whether they're having pleasure or not. If they do, fantastic. But that's kind of secondary in a way. Because it's made for consumers.
It's very interesting that you say that because I think you know, the few times in my life that I have watched some porn, I've noticed...
Also, just for research
purposes. Yes, of course, you know, just so that I could come on the show. Yeah. I've noticed that you can...
Well,
me,
you
I
understand
can see
that also has a couple of meanings.
If you come on the show.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
Single hand.
So I can see when an actor, you know, when a porn actor is enjoying it, and I can see when he's putting it on. And personally, if I see that he's enjoying it, it's much more of a turn on for me.
Sure.
If I see two guys going at it and they're really into it and they're feeling it, that's much hotter
than
a guy who's got his O face on and making like yodeling sounds. It's just like, oh please, come on, you know.
But that's
I don't believe you.
That's a
part of authenticity.
Mm. Yeah, you know, that's a part of being conscious, John Dee, because I had a few weeks ago an experience with my partner, which we went to one of the nice joints that we like to go to. John D told me to go again for research.
Mm-hmm.
And we had this amazing conversation.
I'm being blamed for a lot of stuff.
Yeah. It's not blamed. It's called, you're the father of... Anyway.
Okay, that's right. The catalyst.
Yeah. So anyway, we've been in a sex club. And
Clitalist?
It's another one for Dirty Dictionary.
Clitalist.
And we managed to ask this question, each other, what really turns one on in that scenario of a few people in the same room having sex? And for him, it was something completely different than what it was for me. And for me, definitely, it was the pleasure. So when I see a woman, even if she's not performing, doing crazy porn stuff, but she's into it and she's having this amazing pleasure escalating, or a man, it turns me on immensely. So that was something that I could ask my partner, and I'm wondering, you know, if people actually watch porn, do they know what turns them on there?
No, I don't think they really care. Because people who watch porn, I think most people who watch porn are pretty dumbed down.
Yeah.
It's like most of what's on TV is incredibly stupid and made for an average 7-year-old.
Yeah.
It's
fantasy. Mm. Yeah. It is complete
and
utter fantasy.
But it's not even smart fantasy.
No. It's like B-grade, like X-grade.
Yeah.
It's chewed.
Yeah.
It's chewed and dissected.
Yes.
It's like movies that are coming out today. It's just kind of remakes and volume 5 of this. And
porn is Polony.
Yeah. And that's pretty much what it is.
It is.
Mm.
And to find something that's really interesting, that's really smart, and that's, I think, where a lot of people turn to the fetish and the kink and the different.
Yeah.
Because it's something, there's creativity in it.
Mm.
And even if that's not your particular turn on, there's something there that's more authentic, that's more creative.
Yeah.
Mm.
And I think there's also quite a big difference between European and American porn as well.
Mm.
So I don't know in the gay market if there's a difference.
Definitely.
So, because the American porn is very dumbed down. It's very kind of genitally oriented.
Yeah.
And it's not that beautifully filmed.
No.
And I think a lot of the European porn is much more beautifully filmed. Mm. It is more artistic. It's more creative.
Beautiful music, soundtrack, and soft focus. It's beautiful.
There's an aesthetic value that's much higher than in the American porn. And the interesting thing in terms of that is the judgment that we put on sexuality is generally a very Americanized.
Yeah.
Which is firstly quite puritanical
mm-hmm.
and very limited, whereas a European perspective on sex is much broader. It's much more open.
Mm. Well, in the gay community, one of the big issues is, you know, there's this straight acting, straight looking or mask for mask movement. And it's very prejudiced towards anyone who's effeminate or doesn't present as a big rugby player or ultra butch person. And it's because the porn that is prolific is porn where it looks like two straight men are having anal sex.
Mm.
That's the fantasy. So they have these ultra masculine jocks, you know, who just happen to suck cocks.
Mm.
And that's what everybody gets so turned on about.
So they don't have this maybe different, like, let's call it gay behavior or other elements of gay behavior.
Or just
maybe
vulnerability or sensitivity. Or And there isn't that. I mean, even the guy in these porn movies, even the guys getting fucked, they're not vulnerable at all. They're like, fuck me. It's, you know, it's just
it's not like that.
So aggressive.
If all else fails, you do have another career as a voice artist for porn.
Foley artist, yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, there's good money there.
Go. Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
I'm all for it.
Okay. Tell us more.
So what else is happening then?
So something else that's very exciting about Inova at the moment is we are about to launch another rendition of our Health for Trans healthcare manual. It's a facilitator's manual. And it's just we're facilitating situations where various clinics around the country will be not only sensitized to trans identities and gender non-conforming identities and their healthcare needs, but also becoming more aware of what it is that they need in terms of healthcare. Because a trans person has completely different requirements in terms of healthcare than, say, the average Joe off the street. And they have so many more things to consider. And, you know, for example, what pronoun they prefer to be referred to as, and also whether or not they are having hormone replacement.
Yeah, hormone therapy.
You know, any one of the sort of gender-affirming processes that they may choose to be going through. And so it's wonderful that we're doing so much to break through the levels of ignorance around trans identity and get at least, you know, nurses and doctors and people in the healthcare world who are the sort of first point of reference for a lot of trans people when they're seeking help for their sexual health. And we're getting them more au fait and more understanding of the needs, requirements, and specificities around trans identities. So that excites me a lot because, the more we open our minds to these things, the more exciting the world gets for me. So, you know, people are terrified of trans ideology and they see it as a trans identity seems so disturbing for people who want to subscribe to the binary ideology.
Mm.
And it's very sad for me and also ridiculous. I don't know why anybody else's non-binary identity should be upsetting to you. Or so threatening.
The thing. It's a threat because of the rightness and the wrongness.
Yes.
That if somebody is different generally, then some of my beliefs have to turn out wrong. Yeah.
They're evil.
That's it. Instead of the rightness is that we're all the same.
Mm. Yeah.
And we're not. Interesting thing. There are more trans people being recognized than ever before. More trans people are coming into the world than ever before.
Popular culture, definitely, yes.
Is this because there actually are more trans people? Or has it just been so hidden and so repressed for so long?
You know, living in Cape Town for 10 years, I was exposed to quite a few people who were trans, but they weren't celebrated in a very public way. They were very private people, and there wasn't a lot of activism. I don't remember in the late 90s and early 2000s, I don't remember anyone really being that outspoken. There was one person in Cape Town named Anne who was an activist. I think she was a lawyer. But in general, it was, so we knew about trans people, but there was no limelight or light being shone on them and their situation. Whereas now, I think the zeitgeist in general in society is moving towards the non-binary. So I think whether it's your philosophy or your perceptions on religion or your sexuality, there is a movement towards things not being black and white, more 50 shades of gray. and that's what's so exciting about consciousness, is that people are beginning to realize things are not just one way or another. There are many, many different variants in the spectrum. And because people are now, I think, opening up to this understanding, popular culture has opened itself up to the concept and to the realization that there are these other realities and this fascination.
So the interesting thing about the question is, are there conditions in our society that are creating more people that are non-binary? Are there social conditions? Are there environmental conditions? Is there kind of greater genetic mutation? You know, what's happening?
You know,
or is it simply that the amount of trans people is pretty much the same as there's always been? It's just now coming more into the light, and it's more possible for people to come out for being who they authentically are.
Yeah, I would think that's the case. You know, I think it's also just labels and boxes. Mm. So I think there have always been people who have been non-binary in terms of their expression, in terms of their gender expression, and their you know, how they express themselves in terms of masculinity and femininity. I don't think they necessarily use the terms transgender or identified personally as being trans. You know, I mean, in South Africa nowadays, there are a lot of people who onlookers would say, oh, that person is trans, but most South Africans don't know the term. They've never heard of a transgender person. It's a word and a concept that has originated overseas. You know, we don't really have it as our patois and part of our everyday language here, but what it is people who don't fit into binary gender boxes. And as I think, as far back in history as anyone can remember, and as is recorded,
sure,
there have always been people who have been fluid with their gender and enjoyed fucking with gender and the binary.
Well, a lot of tribal cultures,
yes,
have different words for those people.
Yes.
And it's beautiful.
Definitely.
There's a very interesting thing that comes up, and we spoke about this a little bit last week. Gabor Maté, one of the new researchers with a medical background,
yeah,
he's part of the psychedelic research movement.
Oh, wow.
But he has on YouTube an incredibly beautiful, it's 2 or 3 minutes long, a definition of normality. And he talks about the fact that what we consider beyond normal, which is an incredibly narrow and limited definition, is so cultural that in so many tribes and so many societies, people's differences are labeled and celebrated in some ways.
Yeah.
And the sexual spectrum is just part of that. The gender spectrum is just part of that. That what we consider normal might actually be an incredibly repressed and actually an incredibly untrue expression of who we are because of the labels that we have accepted as being normal.
Mm. Yeah.
And it makes us, it uncomfortabilizes the fuck out of us,
yeah,
most of us, to admit that I could like a whole lot more than I think I'm willing to acknowledge that I like.
I wonder how many people are suppressing themselves. I mean, I think all of us suppress ourselves in one way or another because we want to fit in and we want to come across as you said, in inverted commas, normal.
That's what we want to be seen as.
As, yes.
Yeah.
But I think we all have interesting, kinky, you know, and multifaceted and complex aspects of ourselves.
And we keep coming back to it. And there's a fascinating thing. My friend Galen Fuss, a therapist who specializes in kink and fetish in America.
Yeah.
Some of his articles were recently taken off some of the Facebook psychology groups for dealing with kink. And a whole lot of therapists have come out as labeling kink as abnormal.
Oh.
And he's actually coined, I don't know if he coined, but there's a wonderful term running around called kinkophobia. And a lot of it has been directed at therapists for not acknowledging the normality of kink and fetish behavior. That it might be in almost every one of us to some extent. And we simply repress it and don't allow it to be there.
Well, I can imagine that being a huge issue for a therapist, because if you are in yourself suppressed and you're not allowing yourself to live your true self.
Or your insurance policy doesn't allow you to accept things that, you know, if you will encourage that, what will happen?
Exactly. So you can't allow, you know, you can't encourage somebody else having this amazing blue sky experience when you yourself are holding yourself back and keeping yourself in a little box, because God forbid they inspire you to be your best version of yourself.
Mm. Absolutely. Scary. So this journey, it's really the journey into authenticity.
Mm.
And if we accept that in ourselves, it makes it easier to accept in someone else, even though their authentic expression is different to ours.
Yeah.
And it just brings me back to so much of what I've been writing and talking about, is that it's all within us. It has to come from within us. My definition of myself is within me. It's not about you.
Mm.
It's not about anybody else. And the more I can accept the fullness of myself, every part of myself, ultimately, the more I can express that in you. And that healing is simply the making the connections between parts of ourselves that we've disconnected from.
Mm.
So if I've disconnected from that within myself, I have disconnected from that within you.
Definitely.
And I can't allow you to be that.
Because
mm-hmm. I can't allow myself to be that. So who are you waiting for permission from to be yourself? Ain't you. Coming from anywhere outside.
Mm.
No hand of God coming down from the sky.
Mm-mm.
10 commandments on tablets.
Give yourself your own stamp of approval.
That's it. Absolutely. Okay. What else is happening in Nova Health?
There's always lots of different things. So We the Brave has, we've just released a new lube. It's called Lube Tube.
Lube Tube.
And we've got a fantastic campaign, if I do say so myself, because I write the copy for it.
And so I'm holding a tube of Lube Tube in my hand, and the packaging is fantastic. I can't tell you how good
it actually
is.
Yeah, it's an imaginary one. We'll have to work on that.
Tastes so good.
As well.
It smells. Wow, wait. That's fantastic. What can I do with this?
So first of all, it's not something that you can buy. You need to go to one of our We the Brave Health for Men outreach team members and get tested for HIV. And while you're there, after you've been tested, you can then receive a free sample of our very exciting lube known as Lube Tube.
And where do people find We the Brave Health Team members?
So what they can do is they can log on to healthformen.co.za, or they can log on to wethebrave.co.za, or go on to the Facebook profiles pages, and there is a little connector thing somewhere on the page. It's usually like one of the first things you see, saying where you can find a clinic near you. And the outreach teams are also all over the place. They pop up around, you know, and word spreads fast in many of the communities. Like, so, and that's how we get most of our advertising done. But yeah, so if you hear about our We the Brave Health for Men outreach team members, then go and get tested, and you may just get lucky with some lube.
With some lube. Is it a water-based lube?
It is indeed, because most lubricants these days are water-based because they're the most condom-friendly. They don't compromise the construction of the condom, because a lot of people use things like Vaseline and baby oil, and these things are the worst things you can use for a condom. They basically make your condom melt.
Baby oil is even terrible for your body because it actually dries up internal mucous membranes.
Yeah, no, not a good idea.
No.
So use our amazing water-based lube.
Will it get to retail? Will it get to shops?
We'll see. So far, we're getting some very positive feedback. Mm. I mean, the little caption is "Lube Tube, take it easier." which I think is
you like that.
Quite a cool tagline.
He wrote it.
That I wrote. So I'm just patting myself on the back here. Lucky I'm double jointed. Yeah, so that's quite exciting. And we've got a nice campaign. Check it out on Instagram. You know, follow We the Brave on Instagram or Facebook. And we'll constantly be updating with different things that we do and different events that are going on. We the Brave is not just a place for you to go and get tested for HIV. There's lots of different things we do in the community to promote sex positivity because that's what we're about. We want people to feel good about their sexuality.
As time passes, are more and more people feeling comfortable with being tested?
Is there
still such a stigma around it?
It depends on where you are, and it depends on so many different things. I mean, we've had some very sad news recently about somebody that we know who was sort of a celebrity in the gay community who was promoting HIV awareness, who himself was terrified of disclosing his HIV status to his nearby clinic and so didn't go on ARVs and died as a result of AIDS because he didn't go on ARVs. And it's a very sad and unnecessary thing to have happen that nowadays where people are still so scared to, they don't want to be judged or seen or, and you know, luckily nowadays a lot of people are going to clinics to get PrEP. And I think that's one of the unthought of benefits of PrEP because PrEP is the pre-exposure prophylaxis, and that's taken by people who are HIV negative in order to stay HIV negative. And so now, if you go to the clinic and you're picking up pills, people can't really be sure if you're collecting ARVs or if you're collecting PrEP. So there's less stigma of being seen at clinics, and we are hoping that it's going to increase people's confidence in being able to come and just get screened, not just for HIV, for all the different STIs, and just take care of yourself and make sure you're ready, you know, ripe and ready to go.
We the Brave's SA?
WeTheBrave.co.za.
Okay. And Instagram?
Yes, that's the one. So the picture that you'll see is a very sexy man holding two ostrich eggs in a very strategic spot.
So he has
big balls.
And what's
the point of the ostrich eggs?
Well, I think it alludes to men's testicles, if you would,
but
you know, from a symbolic perspective.
But also, he's not doing an ostrich thing and putting the head in the sand, but actually saying, take the balls by your hand and just go.
He's got big balls.
Well, one of my teachers had a wonderful saying about putting your head in the sand.
Yeah?
If you keep your head in the sand long enough, somebody's going to come fuck you in the ass.
Oh, wow. Okay. I think, I know quite a few people who'd actually now want to go and put their heads in the sand.
Yeah, but metaphorically,
yes,
it's true because we have access to so much information. Mm. We have access to so much education. We have access to so many possibilities.
Yeah. No, it's true.
And as consciousness grows and expands, we have to take more and more responsibility for ourselves, for owning all of ourselves.
It's just another example of how fear and devastates us in so many ways. Our communities, so many people that we look up to, and we as individuals. I mean, fear, it just holds us back in so many different ways.
For so many people, is a positive diagnosis still seen as a death sentence?
For the most part, no. So anyone who is...
Which is an amazing
which
shift.
Which is. So for the most part, anyone who's exposed to social media knows that it isn't necessary, you know, I mean, there are many, many, many people, millions, in fact, who are HIV positive and living long, healthy, happy lives. The issue is that it all boils down to taking your ARVs and adherence. So the problem is that we still have quite a few people dying unnecessarily because they're not taking the ARVs that they could be taking for free, and they're not adhering, they're not taking their pills as often as they should and when they should. And it seems like such a simple thing, but because it's such a simple thing, people overlook it.
But that's part of being human. And the simplest things we struggle with.
Exactly. And HIV is human immunodeficiency virus. So it just it makes you so vulnerable to so many other types of infection. And that's the problem, is that any little infection can become this monster that can eventually claim your life. And that's why it's so important to take the ARVs.
As part of treatment, are people being educated dietarily? Because it's one of my new big things, that so many illnesses, so much disease can actually simply be prevented through really good diet and nutrition.
Yes.
Full stop.
So, I mean, a lot of the content that I write for the Health for Men website and Facebook, as well as We the Brave, is about keeping your immune system strong. So whether that's dosing up on vitamin C and also just, you know, taking care of yourself. If you're
exercising.
Drinking too much coffee, your adrenals are going to be taxed, and that's another way of compromising your immune system. If you're depressed, overstressed, or you're eating rubbish and getting takeaways all the time.
No vegetables, fruit,
exactly.
Anything and live. Yeah.
Those things are dangerous to people who are HIV negative.
Mm.
Those things have terrible effects on anyone, and create things like diabetes and cholesterol and heart conditions. So if you
just really deplete a weakened system much further.
Exactly. So if you are HIV positive, then you're even more vulnerable, and that's, you know, it's all about eliminating or diminishing your vulnerability as much as possible.
Is that part of the training HIV counselors are getting in terms of a general, more holistic idea of health?
So I think that the issue is that it boils down to time.
Mm-hmm.
But generally, I know that doctors and clinical nurses that will always promote a healthy lifestyle and healthy eating. And there is generally, you know, when the guys pop in and have their HIV tests, and then the counseling thereafter that happens, and when they collect, it's all about establishing and developing a relationship with your clinicians, and that's when they can help you. Because if you're only going to pop in the one time, get your HIV test, get your results, and then, you know, hardly be seen again, or you're just going to occasionally pop in and just grab your ARVs and bugger off again, then you're not going to make the most out of the situation, which is they are these amazing fountains of knowledge. They know so much about the clinicians. They know about health in general. So they will obviously be able to give good advice with regards to diet and lifestyle choices and things. And also, you know, most of us know what's good for us. That's the sad truth of the matter, is that most of us know what a healthy meal looks like. Most of us know that doing a little bit of exercise 2 to 3 times a week will make a huge difference in our lives. So it's not a case of having to educate anyone. I think it's a case of helping people to motivate themselves.
Putting focus as well.
Yeah.
Or priority.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's really about education.
Mm.
And again, being aware of ourselves.
And taking care of ourselves. Mm. I think that's the big issue. Self-care.
Listen, self-care for most people is one of the single hardest things.
Mm.
And it's not something that we're brought up with. We're not brought up to value ourselves.
No.
To understand how precious we are. In so many ways, to look after our mental health, our spiritual health, our emotional health, our physical health, our sexual health.
Yeah.
We're not taught that.
No.
It's not part of life skills.
No, even worse than that is that Hollywood and literature teaches us that there's someone out there who we will find who's going to come on a, you know, if it's a guy on a big horse and with this flowing mane of Mills and Boone hair, and he's going to swoop you up and fix you and save it and complete you, that concept of completing you. And it's nobody else's job, fixing you and putting you together and finding what is beautiful and lovable and incredible about you is not anyone else's job. It's your job first, and then hopefully somebody else comes along for the ride
that you can share that with. But you have to do that as a complete person within yourself.
Exactly.
Otherwise it can never be that way with anybody. And it's one of the hardest things to get across to people.
Yeah. And the saddest thing is that if you have that sense of incompleteness and that sense of desperation and loneliness, there's nothing more unattractive.
Yeah.
You basically, you know, you're repelling people, because everybody wants a whole person. Everybody wants to be with somebody who's confident and feels good about themselves, is going to bring something to
the
table.
That is so challenging for so many people. Mm. And it's one of my new sayings, and I'm talking with my clients about it so much. My responsibility in my relationship is to look at my stuff.
Yeah.
And to do something with it. My partner's responsibility is to look at her stuff and to do something with that.
Stuff, yeah.
Our responsibility together is to look at our stuff and do something with that.
Yeah.
And the only way that I can do anything with myself is acknowledging it and then offering some kind of help.
Mm.
And sometimes that's with her, and sometimes it might not be. And the same thing, her with me, and sometimes it's not.
Yeah.
But it is in our relationship. It's our responsibility. And our happiness is our responsibility.
Exactly.
It's not anybody who's going to make us happy, because nobody on the face of this earth is going to make you happy.
The perception is so short-lived.
Mm.
You know, you think you got some, you know, you found that guy, or you found, you know, the one that you were looking for, and he's going to make you happy. And after a few weeks, you can't believe it, but you'll actually start looking again.
Yeah.
Because nobody will fix you.
Exactly.
It's scary as a person that experienced it. I think I was very much aware that I got this perception from somehow when I grew up, that there was going to be someone for me. It's going to fix me. It's going to make me happy.
Yeah.
And it wasn't. Wasn't anybody's fault. It's something that I picked up maybe from media, from stories, from Hollywood porn, wherever it is, that there's someone there. And that's going to do that, you know. There's this unbelievable match. It's going to just sparkle. The reality is that our brain, if we don't divert the energy within, our brain is going to recycle the same shit again and again.
The brain does that. That's where it's going to be more from the heart and more from the body. Because the brain is going to carry on doing what it does.
So true.
Going to go around in the same loops. And we need to change that. We need to add to that.
And I have to say that, I mean, just like you, Tamar, I'm also speaking from experience. It's not just a case of me wanting to sit on the box or stand on the box and preach. It's exactly the same thing. There's a reason why for the majority of my life, I haven't been in a relationship for longer than, I mean, the longest relationships I've been in have been 2 years. I've only had two of those, and the rest of them have lasted, 2 to 3 weeks each? And it's because, day one, day two, day three, the guy seems amazing and perfect and whatever. By the end of the week, I don't really like the way he brushes his teeth. Or, you know, those little things creep up where you realize the fantasy is shattered. This person is not going to make me feel incredible. And you can't set up shop with somebody if you're expecting them to do that for
you. That's it. And we're not taught about love and relationships and pleasure. So we have no education for it. We have no philosophy. We have no framework.
Nothing.
And that's why we have what we do.
And we're also shamed for being single. And the truth of the matter is that it's only when you're single that you really get to do a lot of your establishing work on yourself.
Mm.
And so a lot of people, because they fear the shame and stigma associated with being single, go from one relationship to another, but they never really get to do their work. They've always got this outside influence from another person.
But again, we're not taught the importance of doing your work with yourself.
Mm.
And that's really your prime thing in life. But we put all that outside. It's so much easier to spend all of that effort on a job.
Yeah.
On something external.
Projects.
Yeah.
Getting a perfect body, whatever.
Internally.
Mm.
Where do people get more information on what's happening at Anova?
So there's various different ways. So www.wethebrave.co.za. That's for anything, if you know, the funky, sex positive content. And we've got videos, we've got Instagram, it's fabulous. And then if you want more specific healthcare and sexual health stuff, it's www.healthformen, that's the number 4, healthformen.co.za. And we also, if you are a young person or you know of a young person who wants to empower themselves with more information and resources about sexual health, you can go to Young Heroes on Facebook, or you can even drop us an email at info@youngheroes.co.za.
Thank you. A comoclitic.
Yes.
Let's put you out of your misery, is a preference for shaved genitals.
Hmm.
these days lasered genitals.
See, not much to do with clits.
Oh.
Well, clits don't grow hair.
No, yeah.
That's, Brucey, that's for you. Just tip from me to you.
Oh, that's good to know.
I don't know. What's
so
your...
So I can't tell somebody to go home and comb their clit.
No. Well, it might create some joy in the kink world to comb a clit, but it's very sensitive.
Brush your clit, really. That's such an untidy clit.
Maybe a toothbrush.
For shaved genitals.
Oh.
There we go. Bruce, thank you so much. We always enjoy being with you.
Thank you for having me.
John, do you have the best time in Cape Town?
Stay away so long.
I won't. I will be back.
And bring us your book.
I will.
Like
and
now.
Your lube. Okay. In a separate hand.
I was going to say.
Pages get really messy to turn.
A lubricated book. Paper cuts galore.
Maybe it's something you should learn about your book. It should be in a... How do you say laminated?
Laminated.
Yes. Yeah. So it should be plastic.
Very good idea.
It is. Anything that has, might be turning on remotely, you should laminate.
Put my book in a condom.
We wish you so much pleasure. CliffCentral.com